Hey, welcome to Hellbent, a feminist podcast for those who resist and persist. I'm Devin.
I'm Drexel.
Which is obviously not Sarah.
It could be, though.
You could be.
No, not as good.
So, Sarah's out today. She's taking a well-deserved break. So we have our first guest host, Drexel.
Hey, Hellions.
So, Drexel, who are you?
I'm Drexel.
You're Drexel.
Yeah.
And how did we meet?
We actually met at, at a Maxine Waters.
That's it.
Event.
Event, that's right.
Sarah and I met on Twitter like one does.
Right,
in
of
2017.
Course. Absolutely.
That's the only way to meet people now.
I think it might be.
Yeah.
I really think it might be. So we met at the Maxine Waters event that we went to. That's right, I remember. That was amazing. So what do you do?
I'm currently the producer and host of AfterBuzz TV's The Political Beat, which formerly was Political Culture.
Right.
We come back Tuesday, September 5th. So next week, where I co-host with Chelsea Galicia, and I also manage special events here in the Southwest.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's really awesome. So... we're really excited to have you.
I am excited to be. I've been waiting for this for months.
I know. Well, we asked Drexel to be on the show as a guest, like literally months ago, like one at the Maxine Waters event,
right?
Which
and
was in
Sarah
March.
Was on my show a few months ago as well, and then we're working on having you both on the show,
right?
This coming up soon. So yeah, it was just months in the making.
I know. I'm so excited we're here.
And I'm excited to be here.
Yeah. So let's get into what we're going to talk about today really fast. So first we do listener feedback and general updates like we always do. Block two is Trump land bullshit and a little Hurricane Harvey update. Block three, entitled Russia is still a fucking thing, because it is.
Because it very much so is.
It very much so is. Block four will be our gratitude check, sorely needed in these times. Block five, it's Thursday, so we get to do Hellion of the Week. And finally, block six are our action items, so something you can do after you listen to the show. All right, Drexel, so let's get into your first listener feedback section ever of all time.
All right.
So what do we have up first?
So Taylor tweeted, which is very... ironic.
Apropos.
Ah. Quote, I love you guys. T. Swift, that's Taylor Swift, equals Cersei is the best comparison I've ever seen, which is ironic because Vulture magazine had a whole article yesterday about Taylor Swift, and then I posted on my Facebook wall that Taylor Swift was the love child of Cersei and Donald Trump.
No, it's so true. I mean, she's just got that, like, kind of slippery, like, you
she
know.
Is the snake that she tweeted out the other
exactly.
day.
She really is. So I feel like that all the snake imagery, I still haven't seen the video. I have no interest in it. So,
no, but I'd only see it for Todrick.
Yeah, that's
about it.
I get it. And then Cordy tweeted, quote, Trump's MO, like Missouri tweet, CM equals Claire McCaskill and S equals Senate. That took some effort to sort out, but it helps clarify that tweet. So thank you, Cordy, because I read that tweet about seven times and I had no fucking idea what he was saying. Like, I could not figure it out, but that really helps because...
See, the political junkie in me, I knew exactly where he was going and I was like, that's... That doesn't even make any... Okay,
fine.
I see what you're doing.
Yeah, I see what you're doing there, and it sucks.
And somebody else probably helped you out. You probably didn't even know Claire McCaskill was from Missouri. You probably didn't know who Claire McCaskill is.
No, he did not. I can, like, tell you for sure.
World's OK Aunt tweeted, all my feminist resistance fighters, you must check out at Hellbent Pod. Lots of exclamation points.
There was a lot of exclamation points.
Spreading the gospel of Hellbent Pod one tweet at a time. Emoji, hashtag resist.
Yeah, that's such a great one. I mean, those are the kind of feedbacks that warm my...
That's fine.
I know. They warm my cold feminist heart.
And they were cold, my cold feminist heart,
I know,
too.
It's nice.
Like, you can't have a guy on the show that's not a feminist.
No, it's really true.
I mean,
know.
I would have to leave if I was not.
I know.
We just stop the podcast now.
Get out.
They're done. Get out.
Yeah, Drexel was like, am I the first guy? Because that's... I mean, they're going to be like, what the hell is going on? I was like, no. He's number four.
Right. But
boom.
I'm the first guest co-host.
That is true.
I texted Devin last night and I said, I'm going to be the Anderson Cooper to your Kelly Ripa when Anderson Cooper has to guest co-host.
Exactly.
Now it's Ryan Seacrest. It's one gay for another gay. Right. So it doesn't really
matter. So it's just switching out
gays. I should be the Ryan Seacrest.
So Melissa tweeted, quote, once again, so much genius. Thanks for making my Sunday walk informed and thought-provoking. And also, y'all seriously made my day a lot. But the whole, quote, taking the hatch out to dinner had me giggle snorting. So for those of you who maybe didn't listen, we were talking about how Trump's been violating the Hatch Act, mm-hmm. which says you can't, government officials can't campaign, basically. And so we were talking about how he has been sort of like flirting with the Hatch Act. I think I'm funny, but
that's funny. That actually, as you were saying it again, that made me laugh.
Sometimes you just have a joke that like hits and it's great. All right. So we have a couple of updates for you. First, our newsletter goes out Wednesday. So you can sign up at hellbentpodcast.com/newsletter. Tuesday's episode is still up in the air. Sarah hasn't been feeling so hot. You know, she's taking a break, so it might not be in the cards here at Hellbent headquarters.
But you know what happens on Tuesday? If you guys don't do a show, my show.
That's right. So if you need your political fix, Drexel's
come
show.
On over to the political beat at 6 p.m. We've got Eric Bauman, who's the chairman of the California Democratic Party. He's going to be our first guest of the new season.
That's a great guest.
We've got a lot of really great guests coming. We've got Allison Lundgren Grimes is coming on. We've got Bento, I can't remember what his last name. He's running for Senate out of Texas against Ted Cruz. Mm-hmm. I got a few guests coming up this season, but
Beto O'Rourke.
Yes, yeah. Thank you. he's coming on, and then some California candidates like Katie Hill and she's going to come on a couple weeks, and Brian Caforio, because they're running against Steve Knight here in California. So check it out Tuesdays.
That's awesome. And one last one. So I was just telling Drexel, when I was at the podcast convention, I ordered some new mics for our show. And I just want to say that that is a direct result of the support that y'all have shown us. And, you know, all the support we get on Patreon, and that has paid to upgrade the show. So thank
moving
you so
on up.
Exactly. So that is a direct result of your support. And, you know, we are just humbled and honored. So thank you.
All right, Devin, let's get into block two, Trumpland bullshit and Hurricane Harvey update.
Yes, and also Hurricane Harvey, I think, has been downgraded to tropical storm. So,
but I think it's like taking a turn, like it hit Louisiana for a second, didn't do as much damage right now that we know of, and then it's going to circle back to Texas like next week sometime.
Yeah, it's really scary. Like the natural disasters are so scary.
What's a climate change? I don't know what that...
It's not real at all.
It's fake news.
Fake news, of course.
That's Trumpland bullshit.
Right there. I know. It's ridiculous. And then, of course, we don't really have time to get into it, but Trump is trying to cut disaster preparedness funds from this budget he's proposing in September, so...
Which he did. He reversed the Obama policy last week. I don't know if you guys talked about this already. Yeah. He reversed the Obama policy on flood protection.
Yeah.
Texas also had a bill that was going to roll back protections for for American households in that state. And obviously, this is the reaction.
Yeah.
This is the reaction that Ann Coulter should have tweeted about the other day.
Oh, yeah.
not the old mayor of Houston being a lesbian. It was the fact that that Ted Cruz and Greg Abbott and all those guys are fucking their state.
They're fucking their state up. It's so true. I feel like that's an evergreen tweet. let's get a little bit into Trump. You know what he's been doing lately. He made a tax policy speech when he visited Missouri, and it sucks. It just sucks.
As it usually does.
It's awful. And this time he didn't even really stray from the teleprompter, from what I understand. Like, he just kind of read what he was supposed to read because, who knows. But on a policy level, this speech was absolutely useless. His tax policy was like a vague campaign-style promise. He said that he wants to, quote, cut taxes for companies and families and to encourage firms to move operations to the United States from places such as China. Let's put a pin in that because we're going to come back to that.
He said he hopes he's not disappointed by Congress, which is... I'm assuming he's referring to the flaming box of turds. That was the failed Obamacare repeal. Hello, Mitch McConnell. But that doesn't seem to be making substantive statements on how to generate revenue for tax cuts. And it was really interesting because Missouri is 39th in the country when it comes to taxes.
Oh, like 39th.
39th ranked out of, like, they have the lowest tax rate, income tax rate, and corporate, and they have a low corporate tax rate as well, which is obviously what the president is
talking about.
You know, sometimes when I say the president, I have to rethink of how I act, if I actually want to say that.
I know. We usually say occupant of the White House.
Occupant of the White House, that the current occupant of the White House has been touting. When it comes to corporate tax rates. Mm-hmm. And so it was really odd that he was in a state that benefits greatly already from a low tax rate.
Yeah, that is interesting.
Particularly with a moderate Democrat like Claire McCaskill, who has probably voted several times to keep Missouri's tax rate pretty low.
Right. And he was saying, like, if she doesn't lower them further, like, vote her out.
Right.
Which, put a pin in that. We're going to come back to that, too. I mean, he... You know, and then he sort of did this, like, veiled threat to Congress. He was like, quote, I am fully committed to working with Congress to get the job done, and I don't want to be disappointed by Congress. Do you understand me? Do you understand? Understand, Congress? I think Congress is going to make a comeback. I hope so.
See, this is where I said Taylor Swift is like Donald Trump.
Yes.
Because this is the idea that Congress needs to make a comeback. It's like Taylor Swift's whole Reputation album.
Right. I mean, a comeback.
It's a comeback, right.
Don't call it a comeback.
Do not call Congress making a... what does Congress have to come back from? They're already there. They're coming back from anything.
Exactly. Sure. Exactly. Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Okay. Okay. So, yeah, let's talk about a little bit about how he took this opportunity to talk about, A, his big win in Missouri.
As
always. Yep. And then to tell the crowd about the current senator, Senator McCaskill, and her, you know, how he wants her voted out of office, which it kind of makes it a campaign speech, right?
But they're all campaign speeches.
Right.
You know, I think if you saw the other day the photo of Donald Trump when he was in Camp David sitting by himself.
Yeah.
Everything is... And I tweeted out the other day that the White House and the Office of the President is not a marketing...
It's not a tool. Right.
You know, to sell your hats via... to wear the hat, to sell the hat, and then now... FLOTUS has a hat that says FLOTUS 45 on the side, and now that's going to be another thing. And I think people have to start to realize, particularly Trump Missourians and Trump supporters have to start realizing that this administration is about making money. It's not about and selling them a bunch of bullshit.
Right, right. And, you know, because it kind of devolved...
Probably not even made in America.
Oh, right. I mean, that's, a whole other thing. So this thing kind of devolved quickly into a poorly disguised campaign rally. Which is not legal. I mean, Larry Noble, director of the Campaign Legal Center, said, quote, Trump is not supposed to do any electioneering when he's on government business. Calling for the defeat of somebody is electioneering and is a campaign statement and therefore should only take place at a campaign event.
I think it's one of those things that either the Office of Government Ethics is going to have to step in,
right.
or the GOP is going to have to step. They're not going to do that. Ryan's not going to do that.
Please.
Right. You know, these guys are just not, somebody's not telling him right.
Right.
I think it's just one of those things that people are just going to have to start to kind of talk to their representatives about.
Absolutely.
I don't know what anybody can say to Donald Trump to make him change.
Right.
I don't think it's just going to happen unless it's a legal situation that he's going to get himself in trouble.
But even then we're seeing he's sort of flouting the rules so blatantly.
Right.
You know, so because really what should happen is that the RNC and or the Trump 2020 campaign fund should pay for part of the event. But I mean, really, what's the over under on him actually doing it?
Very small.
Very small. And even if this could be solved by writing a check, I mean, should it be?
I don't think that... I do think that at some point... and I don't know. I think there's a lot of... I don't like to assume.
Right.
So maybe there is something that the Trump campaign from the campaign side is funding certain things.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that sometimes, we have these conversations because we're pretty much all on the same side. And sometimes we go, wait a second, I gotta take a right. minute to like think about
right.
what may or may not be occurring.
Right.
We assume that based on past precedents that the Trump campaign and that Donald Trump are not doing things in the right way
right.
or in the way that there's that are ethical.
Right.
So, you know, but it very well might be one of those things where the campaign's paying for half of it, but I doubt it because we saw that with Steve Mnuchin and his wife the other day.
Right. Well, and I also think that even if they're attempting to do that, to keep on top of that, I feel like when Trump makes some of these off-the-cuff remarks that steer conversations into electioneering or steer speeches into electioneering and campaigning, I mean, they're kind of like, well, fuck, now what? You right. know?
Right. And so, but I know you, to go back to the tax policy
yeah.
piece of it.
Yeah.
You know, if we're talking policy, mm-hmm. this is something we know from, because we're smart.
Right.
That cutting the corporate tax rate does not have an effect on the average American household.
It really does not. I mean, he's saying fancy words like
right.
tax reform, but there's not, and he bills himself as such a populist.
Right.
And there is nothing populist about this tax policy.
Right.
And just to paraphrase a very smart woman, Hillary Clinton,
mm-hmm.
she, you know, it's basically trumped up Reaganomics.
Was it trumped up trickle down?
Trumped up trickle down. Exactly. And this trickle down theory, which we proved in the 80s, doesn't work.
Right. And I think that people have to, you know, the other side of that is the moral argument of that. I think
right.
that people have this idea in their head that Americans are going to look out for each other. We saw that this weekend in Texas where
right.
Americans are willing to look out for each other in what they can do
right.
and what they can show that they can do.
Right.
Once they're in behind closed doors, their money is their money, or a corporation's money is their money.
Right.
They're not going to help out. They're about making money.
Right.
And keeping their money because they don't know what's going to happen next.
Right.
And I think that from a moral standpoint, we know that corporations are not going to be the ones to, they're going to take that money and they're going to say, yeah, we're going to, you know, we're going to maybe hire 100 more people.
Right.
When they could hire 5,000 more
right.
people, and we know that. But
well, because they're not seeing it like, oh, let's keep the profit margins the same and
right.
just hire more people and stimulate the economy. They're thinking, oh, well, we now have higher profit margins.
Right.
Like,
and cutting taxes for the richest populations of corporations, again, does not mean lower taxes for middle income brackets.
Right, exactly. And you know, budget analysts have found that a large portion of these benefits proposed would, you know, really go towards the richest Americans. So 40% of the tax cuts that he's proposing would go to the top 1% of U.S. earners, or those who make more than $730,000 a year.
Right. And so, like, if you think about that.
Right.
If you're that rich.
Right.
Would you be spending your money on somebody else? I mean, we probably would.
Yeah, maybe.
Because we're good people.
Right.
But these people are not going to be shelling their dollars
right,
out.
Right.
To help the next American family.
Right. I mean, Warren Buffett's are rare.
Right.
You know.
Donald Trump's are
the diamond
more yes, exactly.
So, I mean, it's definitely tax policy and tax reform is kind of like one of the GOP, like, you know, things they like to tout, like repealing Obamacare. And like, that's sort of been the thing that they campaigned on. So, you know, I know this is really important to the GOP and they've really been, you know, trying to push this. So it's definitely something to keep your eye on.
Yeah. Yeah, you definitely, I know that the House GOP is going to be bringing a bill up in front of Ways and Means, in the Ways and Means Committee, which reminds me of a West Wing episode. By October, with a floor vote in November. So definitely call all your representatives,
yeah.
you know, beat the door down on Paul Ryan's office.
Yes.
Because you know, there's Wisconsin is going to get hit. You know, these red mm-hmm. states are going to get hit. You know, we're kind of in a bubble in California and,
right.
and those who are listening in New York and D.C. and
right.
in Washington State, because we do have states that utilize their money properly.
Right.
But tax rate or tax brackets and these tax cuts are affecting the red states that their representatives are pretending like they benefit.
Right.
That their constituents benefit from.
Is that irony or just...
I think people generally think that people are good.
Right.
And they give people the benefit of the doubt, like, you know, if I pray enough, it's going to work.
Right.
If I do my charity enough, it's going to work.
Right.
If I give back, it's going to come back to me. And that's just not how we're built right now.
Right.
And we should be.
Right.
But that's just not how it is.
Absolutely. So, yeah. So, moving on a little bit, because we could talk, I could talk about
morality and tax policy all the time.
But, you know, we kind of want to talk about when Trump visited Texas and how even in this sort of, like, crisis mode, he still managed to make it all about himself.
Yes.
Yes. Shock. Right? Yeah, I mean, kind of, we mentioned in the last episode that Trump is sort of been a fucking monster around this. He's been very cold and calloused, which why would we assume any different?
Right.
But, you know, his tweets in the days after Hurricane Harvey, now Tropical Storm Harvey, devastated Houston and the surrounding areas, have been self-centered, self-congratulatory, and off-topic in, like, the most disgusting ways possible. So among the subjects he's tweeted about, congratulating himself on his electoral win in Missouri, like we said, promoting noted dickwad David Clark's new book, and this one's a direct quote, quote, wow, now the experts are calling hashtag Harvey a once-in-500-year flood. Among other tweets that, you know, have asserted that Harvey is a record-breaking disaster.
Yeah, I don't follow Donald Trump on Twitter, but every once in a while I'll, like, follow the thread and I'll go back to his Twitter page.
So I can
tell you what he's not tweeted about.
Oh, right.
Any concern for the citizens affected by the storm.
Right.
And ways in which people can help or donate to relief efforts, which we've seen from Republican senators, Democratic senators, Hillary Clinton,
Obama.
Barack Obama, you know, you know, it's just a whole bunch of people except for Donald Trump.
Right.
I feel like the children might, except for the boys, probably have tweeted at something at some point.
At something, you know? I mean, and then he also admitted openly that he pardoned Joe Arpaio on Friday because he thought the ratings would be higher.
And I saw that clip. I don't know if you saw the clip, but When I read it, I was like, it has to be a joke.
Yeah, right? Someone's making like, this. This is the
onion. Right. I was like, maybe he's joking.
Right.
Now, not that it was a joke, that maybe he was just like,
oh,
like, you know, off the cuff and giving the press a hard time. But then I watched it back and I was like, oh, he's not joking.
No, he's almost never joking.
Never joking.
He has no sense of humor.
No. But I, you know, so the White House released a video yesterday about Trump's visit, and it showed a crowd shot of, it was just a crowd shot of what was going down the road as the motorcade was passing by. Mm-hmm. Nothing about Donald Trump meeting with families.
No.
Nothing about, you know, we've seen Clinton, Bush, and Obama console families in times of devastation. As far as I understand, and maybe somebody can correct me, we have not seen photos of Donald Trump visiting families. We have not seen statements from the White House talking about what they're doing personally, what the Donald Trump organization is going to be donating to families.
Right.
We've seen football players and celebrities and families who probably have no money. You know, Facebook posts I've seen from a lot of people creating fundraisers for people. So I think that we are not seeing that from the head of state right now.
We're really not. And honestly, it's really frustrating. You know, because we don't expect much from Donald Trump, right?
We expect the bare minimum.
With the absolute bare minimum. Like, Lord, give me the confidence of a mediocre white dude, right? Which Donald Trump is the absolute embodiment of. But, I mean, I just, it's very frustrating to see him go to Corpus Christi, you know, on Tuesday. And not only was he not actually interacting with anybody, not only was he not, you know, really even saying words of comfort. I mean, he was talking about how big and amazing the storm is. But he also, like you mentioned earlier, he was wearing this hat. So can you tell us a little bit about the hat he was wearing?
So there is some discussion as to whether this is a violation or simply ethically wrong. Trump likes to ride a fine line. Crew, the Citizens for Ethics, is suing Donald Trump over his international business interests, and they are arguing he is violating the Emoluments Clause.
I know.
They also tweeted, as at real Donald Trump leaves for Texas, he's making sure he's carrying his hats. He's been advertising yours for just $40 on his campaign website, which we talked about the FLOTUS hat.
Right.
It's already up. It's got 45. It's in blaze. It's got USA on the front.
Right.
It's red. There's a red one. There's a white one.
Right.
You know, but I do want to mention a thing, and I think you guys might have mentioned it briefly. Maybe not, because he didn't go until Tuesday.
Yeah.
Is I do want to point out the fact, because this is a feminist podcast, that Melania can wear whatever the fuck she wants.
Oh, I completely agree. Actually, that was one thing where I was like, you know, I get it.
But like maybe she doesn't have tennis shoes.
Exactly. Right. And I'm guessing she probably does not, honestly. You know? Like, so, those were obviously like some poor AIDS sneakers that she changed into on.
I mean, she looked amazing.
She did look amazing.
She had those aviators on. Right. She had a jacket on.
I know. She did look great. All right. And the thing is like, we, you know, Melania Trump, really, it's obvious she doesn't want to be first lady.
Right.
It's obvious she doesn't want to do this job. And I, again, from a feminist point of view, I'm like, you know what? You didn't make this choice necessarily. Right. Like, you don't have to be FLOTUS.
Right.
That's fine. You know, she knows. I read this really interesting article about how, you know, what she was wearing is really reflective of who she is. You know, she's a model. She knows, you know, how to dress, what her best angles are. And she looked amazing in that one photo that everyone's using.
Oh, yeah. With her hand in her pocket.
Oh, she looks...
she found that light and the camera.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it was amazing. Like, from a modeling point of view. And, yeah, if she wants to wear stilettos...
Let her wear stilettos.
Yeah. I mean, it is... what I think people are reacting to is that it's a little bit like, let them eat cake. Like, you're dealing with devastation.
The Steve Mnuchin situation.
Right, exactly. And I'm wearing, you know... $1,000 stilettos that I can barely walk in.
Right. And I think it's also, I think the other part of that is people find it ironic that Donald Trump went around the country touting that Democrats were out of touch.
Right.
And this I can understand is the hypocritical viewpoint, the hypocritical stance on that, where you're like, well, that's clearly out of touch with where you're going.
Right.
You're not going to be walking in stilettos. She's not going to get those stilettos wet in Corpus Christi.
Hell no.
That's just not going to happen.
Right.
You know, she might walk through Lakewood. What is Joel Osteen's church?
Whatever. Oh, that is. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You know, with those stilettos on. Right. But, you know, she's certainly not going to be walking through the streets of Corpus Christi in those.
But it's interesting because in this article that I read, and we'll link to it, I think it was in the Washington Post, it was also talking about how, you know, Melania Trump has not really shown the traditional FLOTUS sort of, you know, demeanor, which, again, for me...
We haven't seen a lot of her, though.
We haven't seen a lot of her at all. But, you know, she's not, like, warm and cuddly and comforting, and that's never going to be the persona she projects. And, you know, neither is Donald Trump. I mean, he hasn't made any mention of you know, helping people or anything like that. So, you know,
FLOTUS also hasn't started her initiatives yet either, which is traditional. Which traditionally, at this point, we would know that the East Wing and the Office of the First Lady is going to be pushing out some, you know, policy that the First Lady really wants to tout, which hers was cyberbullying, which, you know, obviously it's not working out for the White House. You know, she should start with the top.
Yeah, right?
If she wants to instill some sort of...
As Sarah likes to say, the fish rots from the head.
It does.
So maybe, you know, deal with cyberbullying with your
husband. Donald Trump's like a catfish, because, you know, catfish, like, in the mud.
Yeah.
They're really muddy. They're muddy. What do they call that? They're dwellers.
Yeah, bottom feeders.
Yeah, bottom feed. Donald Trump is a bottom feeder.
Yes, literally.
And not in the gay way.
Okay, Drexel, let's get into block three, which is Russia is still a fucking thing.
Because it is. As much as Donald Trump doesn't want it to be.
I know.
So apparently he signed a letter of intent to pursue a Trump Tower project in Moscow. I thought he wasn't doing business in Moscow.
Right.
But apparently he is.
Right, right.
4 months into his campaign for president.
So this was after he announced that he was running for president.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This was the letter. It was signed October 28th, 2015, which by that point we were already in that we had just met Bernie Sanders.
Right.
And then Hillary Clinton had just kind of announced right before
right.
that. Too.
Come onto the scene.
But they weren't coming down elevators. like I said before, while Trump was clear that he had no ties to Russia whatsoever during his campaign, this is clear evidence that he fucking lied.
Yeah, which is, again, like, shock. Oh,
right,
oh
yeah,
my goodness.
Yeah. Like, it's like those Batman things.
Yeah.
Like every time Donald Trump does something now, we should all just picture those old Batman.
The comic book things.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Wham.
Yeah, especially when Jeff Sessions walks up.
Oh, God. Pow, wham.
Yeah, see? It's like the old villain.
I know. Well, I always say that Mike Pence looks like the bad guy in an X-Men movie who wants to, like, make all the mutants register.
He was the one that, whoever was the one that created Wolverine.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't remember his name. Somebody's going to tell us
that. Yeah, exactly. So a little bit of context here. We mentioned very briefly on Monday that a Trump associate, Felix Sater, who is still very interesting, and we still have no time to get into this dickwad right now, but he wrote a series of emails to Trump's personal lawyer, Michael Cohen. So the email he wrote was about the Trump Tower Moscow project. Mm-hmm. So Sater was lining up funding for the project through VTB Bank, which is a Russian bank under U.S. sanctions for its role in undermining democracy in Ukraine.
Says who? Says who?
Everyone. Every poll. Everyone. So then in the email that Sater wrote to Cohn, dated November 3rd, 2015, so this is less than a week after Trump signed the letter of intent for the Trump project in Moscow, he said, quote, "Michael Cohn, I arranged for Ivanka to sit in Putin's private chair at his desk and office in the Kremlin. I will get Putin on this program and we will get Donald elected. We both know no one else knows how to pull this off without stupidity or greed getting in the way. I know how to play it and we will get this done. Buddy, our boy could become president of the USA and we can engineer it. I will get Putin's team to buy in on this. I will."
You know, it's so interesting. So two things out of that whole thing.
Yeah.
A, it sounds like a James Bond movie.
Right? I can't wait for this to be a book.
Maybe this is what's happening right now.
Right.
This is all being filmed.
Yes.
They're trying to figure out what to do with Daniel Craig for James Bond.
Right.
He's coming back for the next one, but what happens after?
Right.
So we needed this to happen. But I think Ivanka's office also put out a statement on this situation. And basically it said, like, Ivanka never met with Putin.
Right.
But it didn't say that she never was in Putin's office. Never,
sitting in his chair.
They selectively left out things other than about meeting Vladimir Putin, probably because he never meets with women.
Right. Let's be honest.
Let's be honest. Right.
It's not because she didn't want to.
Right. And of course, like, lest we forget that intelligence agencies have determined that Russia did, in fact, interfere with the 2016 presidential election.
Right.
Like,
so
we don't want to forget that.
Right, exactly. Well, it's just interesting because, you know, he's saying we can engineer this and I'll get Trump on board, or I'll get Putin on board Trump's campaign. And, you know, there have been reports that maybe he overstated, like Sater overstated his connections with Russia and Putin. But even if that's the case, I mean, there's sort of like a logical progression here, right? So this was the end of 2015.
Right.
And we know that Russia did interfere in the 2016 election, both with propaganda campaigns and also direct hacking attempts.
Right.
So,
and that's one of those things, like, I try not to, obviously we're about to go into a midterm election and Democrats have to do everything they can to win. And so, you know, I was never a Bernie Sanders fan, and a lot of the, you know, supporters, and I'm sure they say the same thing about Hillary Clinton fans, got a little rabid. But I'm always shocked that after hearing all of this that the propaganda that Russia really targeted Sanders supporters, mm-hmm. And Greens and a lot of independents across the country, that they haven't taken a step back and really said to themselves, what did I contribute to and what did I learn? What did I learn
right.
that I probably really took in the way that it wasn't supposed to, and how much of it was actually true?
Right. Absolutely. Well, and, you know, it's interesting because Sarah Kendzior, we interviewed a couple months ago, and she said, you know, with these midterm elections coming up, she's like, it doesn't matter who's running in elections if the elections aren't free and fair.
Right.
And it's pretty obvious that Russia has been interfering and our elections may not be free and fair.
Right.
And that is so important to deal with.
Right. And I think that people also have to, you know, there was that video that there were the two videos with Barack Obama where they showed that people can manipulate his the faces of people.
Right.
And I think people really have to start to do their research.
Up their bullshit meter.
Up their bullshit, right. And they
turn that dial all the way up.
Turn that dial way up.
Yeah.
Because I think that, you know, people like us who listen to podcasts, all this, particularly political podcasts, or who are political junkies, or Pod Saves America, or my podcast.
Right.
And show. And we know.
Right.
But we can't, you know, people are muting us on Facebook because they really don't want to quote unquote talk about politics when really they should be you know, protecting themselves and their vote that they have the right to.
Right. Well, and you know, that's kind of the other piece of this. So the elections need to be free and fair and free of outside influence, but also we need to deal with the voter suppression problem in this country.
Right.
You know, we need to deal with the fact that there are entire swaths of the population that are disenfranchised.
Right.
And that GOP, you know, senators and congressmen and women keep creating legislation designed to keep going with voter suppression.
And I, you know, I know some people like to make it, would probably make an economic argument for voter suppression.
Right.
When it's actually a racial argument
100%.
For voter suppression.
100%.
I always tell people, we go through this whole thing where people are like, I'm not a racist. And I think when people say, that I'm not a racist,
yeah,
they automatically assume that they're talking about being racist against black people.
Right. Right.
And they forget that being a racist is not just about black people.
That is true.
We're seeing that in this Trump administration
right.
with Latinos. We saw it during the campaign against Muslims. We continue to see it against Muslims with the Republican Party and some Democrats.
Yeah.
So just so that everybody is clear, you can be a fucking racist against other races other than black people.
Right.
If you don't like Latino, if you in your head don't think that you're not a racist,
right.
check your friends, first of all.
Yeah.
if you don't have a good diverse, some color in there, you might want to rethink your thought process.
Right.
And you might want to think of whether or not you're a racist. But you know who probably is a racist?
Who?
Cone.
Oh, well, yeah. You think?
Michael Cone.
Says who?
Because he sent those emails to Putin's spokesperson.
Yeah.
The Washington Post reported that Cohen's emails to Dmitry Peskov, I don't know if you watch Madam Secretary.
I don't.
Well, I think there's a Dmitry Peskov on Madam Secretary. I don't know. I don't know how many Russian names are out there, but that sounds familiar to me. Dmitry Peskov, it provides an example to a Trump business official directly seeking Kremlin assistance in advancing Trump's business interests. Cohen stated that he discussed the deal three times with Trump, like Judas, or like Peter. Peter denied Jesus three times with Trump, and that Trump signed a letter of intent with the company on October 28th, 2015. Again, and obviously, we're going to talk about Robert Mueller here in a second. The shit doesn't lie.
Right.
This is three times.
Right.
Trump signs the letter. You got Trump's signature.
Yeah.
Michael Cohen said the Washington Post said that the Trump company began to solicit designs from architects and discussing financing. So now you're starting to bring all of these people in.
Right.
You're not only talking about the people who were making the deal.
Right.
Now, Robert Mueller can go after any of these architects and say,
yeah,
what were the conversations like?
Right. What were you working on?
Right. What were you working on? I want to see the correspondence.
Right.
It's the rabbit hole that will not stop.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it also really shows that this wasn't just some thing they were discussing in the abstract.
Right.
This was something that they were pursuing and that they were all interested in and that Donald Trump himself wanted to do.
And I don't want people to think that, at least from my standpoint, that doing business deals in other countries is bad.
No, that's not bad.
The Trump Tower in Moscow, not necessarily bad.
Bad you can do, by
and,
itself.
And by itself. The idea of lying
right.
that you have not done business deals with Russia and how they're financing.
Right.
I was listening to Pod Save America a few weeks ago, and they brought up, Tommy Vietor brought up, somebody brought up the fact that Russians are starting to infiltrate the American infrastructure, not only through through obviously propaganda, but also through infrastructure.
Right.
In buying up buildings mm-hmm. and high rises and filling their buildings up with people who are probably Russian, who probably don't have the United States' best interests, and those who they can manipulate to do Russia's business.
Right.
Spies and everything like that. So as the United States is kicking out diplomats,
right.
that does not mean that those diplomats cannot buy private residence in those buildings like Trump Tower.
Right. No, it's true. It's true. So, at the very least, Trump lied about his business dealings with Russia. So like you said, it's not necessarily bad to do business with Russia or any other country. Right. But the fact of the matter is he was running for president at the time
right.
and he lied about it. So that's the problem. And so these emails, along with Don Jr.'s Demi Lovato-esque emails, because he said, I love it later in the summer.
That's hilarious.
Have led to kind of subtle clues that Mueller's investigation is really heating up here.
Right. And we know that every time the president starts to get crazy.
Yeah. It's because
Robert Mueller is about to
drop
something huge.
Well, and so this most recent sort of story about Mueller is that he's teamed up with New York Attorney General Eric Schneiderman to look into the financial transactions of Paul Manafort in New York.
Right.
And so is this important in light of all this email bullshit?
Absolutely.
Yes. So it's also highly satisfying because Eric Schneiderman is the one who won the $25 million lawsuit against Trump University back in November 2016.
And Eric Schneiderman hasn't been shy about the fact that he is not a fan of Donald Trump or the Trumps in general.
Right.
And, you know, I'm sure Eric Schneiderman will run for governor at some point in the next few years once Andrew Cuomo decides that he's going to run for president. That's just the reality.
That's fair, yeah.
We already have Eric Garcetti in New Hampshire. I don't know if anybody knows that, but he was in New Hampshire this week.
Really?
Yeah. L.A. mayor, for those that don't know, Eric Garcetti is the Los Angeles mayor here. He was in New Hampshire.
Interesting.
Yeah. And,
interesting.
So by coordinating with the New York Attorney General's office, Mueller can look into state crimes. And this is something that Arizona is going through right now with Joe Arpaio.
Exactly.
Where the judge throughout the lawsuit, I mean, not throughout, she put a hold on the on them on throwing out the part, throwing out the, I'm sorry, the
pardon.
The pardon, yeah.
Yeah.
And so now she's going to bring everybody in.
Uh-huh.
And they're going to have to explain why they wanted to pardon him.
Right.
And then I think, and I said this on another show the other day, I said, it's the Arpaio thing is going to end up being a civil state suit.
Yes.
The state of Arizona is going to have to bring a suit against him. Mueller can look into state crimes committed by Manafort, thus providing more leverage to get Manafort to cooperate with a larger Trump investigation. Remember, presidential pardons do not extend to state crimes. If Trump can't pardon Manafort, will Manafort go to jail to protect Trump? What do you think?
No.
You don't think so?
I don't. I really don't. I think I don't think there's much loyalty within the Trump team.
I like to think that too. However, I know that if you have money, and we know that if you have money, you know, even if he is thrown in jail, it's not, you know, he's going to be in one of those jails like Martha Stewart was in.
Right,
Know? So he might just be like, you know what?
That's fine.
I'm going to do that. I'll still make money from the outside because that's what rich white people do.
That's true.
And from the inside.
I'll just chill in here for, you know, a couple
of
years.
And they won't know a thing.
Right. That's true.
But, you know, then Mueller's going to tighten the reins and he's going to go after people close to him. Because
that's
the hardball piece of it.
Right. And I suppose maybe there is more loyalty than I would like to think. But the fact of the matter is that a lot of these sort of, you know, people who've been in Trump's orbit, you know, Trump has no loyalty to them, right? He just drops them like flies when he's done with them. So, I mean, is there a reciprocal loyalty? I don't know.
I think that there is in certain people. And we see that in Corey Lewandowski.
Right. That's true.
I mean, like, they dropped him and he's still coming back. Like, he wants another job in the White House.
Right.
But we know he's never going to go back in the White House because John Kelly's just, it's just not going to happen.
It's just not going to happen.
But
absolutely
that doesn't
not.
Mean, here's what I think is happening. I think that those people on the outside are still Donald Trump's advisors.
Yeah.
And, like, he's listening to them more than he's listening to the people inside. So we might think that Steve Bannon is out.
Oh, please.
But, like, I think you guys said, I think maybe you guys touched on it. I know that I've touched on it in the past, which is the fact that both Breitbart and Donald Trump's campaign are both financed by the Mercers.
By the Mercers.
And so there's no way that, and if people think that Steve Bannon being out is a good thing,
right,
it's actually probably worse than you think because of who's financing those guys.
Well, and he now has this veneer of independence.
Right.
Right? Like he's not in the White House anymore, so he's more objective somehow.
Right. And I think it's the bait and switch. It's
a little bit.
Show people a little bit that you can be independent,
right,
but then pull the rug out from them later on and be like, oh, they were. And then people just assume that Breitbart is, you know, not a fan of Donald Trump when really they're doing Donald Trump's bidding.
Exactly. Well, and I also think, you know, how far Manafort will go to protect Trump really depends on how deep his ties, you know, his financial ties and sort of the organized crime tie, to get a little tinfoil hatty here, you know, how deep his ties to Russia and the Ukraine and where his money is. I think it really depends on how deep that goes.
And I would also argue that, you know, we've seen a lot of Russian diplomats be killed over the past few
months.
And so either Robert Mueller is going to have to protect some informants.
Right.
Or Russia, depending on how far they get down that rabbit hole, they're going to start offing some American citizens, which won't make a big difference because Donald Trump's going to be like, he's going to have to retaliate one way or another.
Right. All right, Drexel. So, wow, that was a lot.
That's a lot.
I know. So let's get into something we all love, our gratitude checks.
Yeah.
So what are you grateful for today?
I really hope I'm doing this right.
You are.
I got a couple.
Good, good.
So I'm giving a little shout out to my LGBTQ fam.
Yes.
This week, my colleague and friend, trans activist and editor-in-chief of Wear Your Voice magazine, Ashley Marie Preston. She's the first transgender editor-in-chief of any magazine, digital or hard copy.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
We sit on the board of Stonewall Democrats here in Los Angeles together.
Oh, awesome.
She confronted notable dickwad, I hope I'm using that correct
yes.
as well, Caitlyn Jenner here in Los Angeles at a trans-related fundraiser.
Oh, really?
It's notable for a couple of reasons.
Uh-huh.
Because first, Ashley and Caitlyn used to be cool before the whole supporting Trump thing.
Sure. Sure.
And two, it's been picked up by some pretty big publications, Advocate Magazine, Huffington Post, if you can call it a publication, and TMZ, if you can call it
that. I was going to say.
There was a video, so Ashley told Jenner she believes she committed the ultimate betrayal and that it was really fucked up that she continued to support somebody that's attempting to erase our community, the trans community,
right.
And you support it. I'm clearly paraphrasing here because there were a lot more like F-bombs as she was saying.
Oh, I love that. Because normally when we paraphrase, we add F-bombs.
You add F-bombs, right.
Right.
I wanted to,
You're trying to like
pull back a little bit. And then Harvey Levin from TMZ invited Ashley on the live show and tried to trip her up because, you know, Harvey Levin
right.
is like a Trump supporter.
Yes. Like, and he like will push like
right.
pro Trump stories.
Yeah.
Which
TMZ is kind of doing that. And you're like, okay.
Okay, whoa.
And then she swatted those down like the bad bitch she is. and Neil Broverman from The Advocate, who wrote an article in The Advocate this week, said that we need to follow Ashley's example and call out recklessness and hypocrisy.
Yeah, I completely agree. And we say this a lot, but it feels like what this election has done, at least for a lot of women, has sort of like torn open that like mad bitch
right.
inside.
And I think that's why this podcast is so important
right.
because there aren't a lot of feminist podcasts out
right.
there.
Right.
And I think that, you know, you guys have a lot of fans on here who really appreciate the voice that you guys have and then feeding that information that they can then take
right.
to, you know, maybe, like I said, people just don't want to get into, they don't want to quote unquote talk politics.
Right.
But sometimes they just need a little push to give them that little
absolutely
that. So basically what I'm trying to say is, you know, how fucking cool is it in 2017 to not only see trans men and women continue to stand up and have a voice, but Ashley is a woman of color and
yeah.
she's setting the bar pretty high for the rest of us as members of the community and allies
right.
To continue to be a voice for the voiceless and to basically call a spade.
Yeah.
I do love that term too.
I know.
You know, just call a spade a spade.
Right. I
Maybe
know.
That should be somebody's campaign. That might be don't nobody steal that. If I ever run for office and I see if I ever see somebody's campaign slogan, I'm about to call a spade. I know where it came from because you listen to this podcast. I don't know how many of these I get, but I did want to take the time here because being gay is clearly in. And as Jack said from Will and Grace,
right.
we're here where Craig get used to it. I just want to point out that earlier this week, 130 evangelicals, if that's what you want to call them, someone should check on Joel Osteen.
Yeah, someone needs to check on Osteen.
Signed on to some shitty document called the Nashville Statement.
That just sounds like such an asshole-y like name.
Right.
The Nashville Statement.
I thought it was like the Nashville hot chicken that keeps going around.
Right.
And I was really confused.
Yeah, right.
And I was like, is this a thing?
I don't get it.
Yeah, whatever. And I love Nashville because Nashville's very pretty.
I love Nashville.
Yeah.
Oh, it's my favorite city.
It's a series of 7 points reasserting conservative views on LGBTQ issues.
Because that's what we need.
Right. First of all, I never know why conservatives spend so much time thinking about gays anyway. And I mean, I can think of a couple of reasons why, but it'd make a whole bunch of people check their partner's phone. I did say that being gay was in. but no matter what some silly closeted evangelicals think, I can really continue to be appreciative of the love and support from religious communities in general to the LGBT community, Christians, Muslims, Catholics, whatever. Now, I know plenty of awesome practicing folks who will be drinking at my wedding next year.
That's what weddings are really
for. I mean, if you're going to drink with the gays. I always tell my straight friends, I'm like, you do realize that gays are the best wingmen, right? We can really
do this.
We can get it together for you.
Yeah, right.
You know, because straight guys are not very good at at, you know, talking to women.
Right.
And we can help facilitate that because women love gays.
That is true. Love that. Okay.
What about you?
So mine is not nearly as fun. Like, not it even
is
close.
Fun, though. I read it.
Yeah, it's good.
I mean, it's good for the people.
Right. All right. So basically, federal prisons are now required to provide pads and tampons free of charge for inmates, which this is something that's close to my heart, which sounds weird. But like, I think that providing pads and tampons to people who need them for free of charge or low cost is really important. Like, call me bananas, but I just feel like it's a basic human hygiene thing. You know, first of all, the fact that this wasn't the case, that they weren't providing these things from the beginning of time, is so beyond frustrating. And I don't know why I would think that they would be provided, because, you know, the patriarchy runs everything, including the prisons. So why provide basic hygiene when you can make money off of it? And also, periods are so gross.
Yeah, I don't know anything about a good period.
I know. So women should be punished for having them. Well, what do you think?
I don't, you know, I think it's one of those things that prisons, obviously we went through a whole campaign where we were talking about for-profit prisons.
Right.
And, you know, it's constitutionally, in my opinion.
Yes.
Something that in the cruel and unusual punishment clause, that this is something that people really should, from a morality standpoint, and I go back to that because Republicans like to tout morality.
Right.
Yeah, they're the first people not to make decisions about human beings.
Right.
And I think that federal prisons need to realize that there might be criminals, people might do a really, really bad things, but at the end of the day,
right,
there's a lot of decisions that go into being a criminal.
Right.
You don't know people's circumstances.
Right.
And particularly women.
Right.
Who have children.
Yeah.
Why are they in prison? And
right.
I think we need to do a better job of not only rehabilitating people in
right.
and out of the prison systems, but while they're in it, taking care of them in a way that is humane.
I agree.
And we don't Joe Arpaio anybody.
Right, exactly. It doesn't matter, you know, what, in my opinion, again, it doesn't matter what you've done. If you're in the care of the state, you deserve, you know, these basic things.
Right.
You know,
because it's constitutionally mandated.
If nothing else, it's constitutionally mandated. So now the Bureau of Prisons basically released a memo saying that all facilities housing female inmates must provide two sizes of tampons as well as panty liners. So they state, quote, wardens have the responsibility to ensure female hygiene products such as tampons or pads are made available for free in sufficient frequency and number. You know, prior to this memo, the type of products provided was not consistent and varied by institution. So that was the statement. So, and this one woman who was interviewed in this article, Andrea James, she's a lawyer and founder of the National Council for Incarcerated and Formerly Incarcerated Women and Girls. This was a huge win. So James served 18 months in prison and said that during her time incarcerated, that they had one type of inadequate sanitary pads. And while tampons and other pads could be purchased, it really puts undue financial strain on the inmate. I mean, she was saying, quote, she said, quote, we are paid 12 cents an hour. That's the choice. Do I buy tampons or do I call my children
right.
with that money? You know, and so, I mean, that's inhumane to me. That's cruel
it is,
and unusual.
It is. And then from a financial standpoint, like, I get it.
Yeah.
I think people should understand, like, you know, if a state's decision mm-hmm. is, do I pay for the education of the students of my state,
right,
or do I put money into my state's prisons? That's a hard decision
yeah.
for governors and for state legislatures to have to make.
Right.
So I do think at the end of the day, there's a couple things that people should do, and that is, you know, donate
yeah.
certain things like
yeah.
we would for a natural disaster.
Right, right.
To prisons, to their local prisons or whatever, and just make sure that people have basic things that they need
right.
and, you know, do some good in the fucking world.
I agree. Well, and it's interesting because the Bureau's policy memo comes a month after the Democratic Senators Cory Booker, Elizabeth Warren, Dick Durbin, and Kamala Harris introduced the Dignity for Incarcerated Women Act.
No Republicans. Shock
what?
And awe.
Shock and awe. I feel like we could just, like, that can be the title of every episode. You know, so, and if passed, this law that's being proposed will reform measures in several prisons, including an overhaul of visitation policy, a ban on shackling pregnant women, or keeping them in solitary confinement,
mm-hmm.
Which I talked about a couple of podcasts ago about how it's that's also inhumane to shackle a woman while giving birth, and a ban on charging inmates for phone calls.
Right.
Including also in this bill, it would require multiple sizes of tampons and pads for free. So this is a step in the right direction, but it definitely is just a step, and we really need to think about prison reform kind of as a whole.
Right, and I think that the other part of that, and I talked about people donating, companies, the tampon companies, yeah, and the tampon pad companies, should be donating
100%.
Things. It's like these things are made for probably 5 cents.
Right.
And they, you know, donate what's left over. You know, like, you know, when you go to the 99-cent store here, it's, yeah, like things that, you know, it's like things that are slightly damaged, but right, not really damaged, right, or whatever, or they were mislabeled or whatever.
Yes.
Send that stuff not, right, just to the 99-cent stores,
but
send those to the prisons.
Right. Or homeless shelters.
Or
both, ideally. Yeah.
Right.
Okay, so we have one listener gratitude check for, yeah, today, and it comes via Facebook. A listener, Christina, said, quote, "I am grateful for my new job in a very much more friendly and supportive environment than my previous one, and especially the actions of one of my colleagues who said he was trying not to use guys in his emails since I joined the group, but he obviously wasn't completely successful." We're not completely successful here, right, either, trust me. So she goes on, quote, "He was accepting suggestions for a replacement, so I suggested superheroes, and he went with it. Now we are all addressed as superheroes or heroes, much to my satisfaction."
That's so much fun. I might start using that.
Dear heroes.
I work in an office where it's all girls.
Right.
I'm the only male,
right,
in the office. And I actually say folks because I'm from the South.
Right.
So I'll say, hey, folks, or,
yeah,
hey, team, or, right, you know, different things. But I might start to say, hey, superheroes.
Seriously. I mean, I just feel like that's kind of one of the best ways you can be addressed.
That's so fun.
Okay, Drexel, so on Thursdays we have a fan favorite segment called Hellion of the Week. So we have two honorable mentions. So who are our honorable mentions for this week?
So the first is at Mattress Mac. The owner of a chain of furniture and mattress stores tweeted, "Our GFNFWRY,
I think it's the freeway, yeah,
and GF Grand Parkway stores are open for those in need. If you can safely join us, we invite you for shelter and food. God bless." Along with pictures of people taking refuge in the store. Split screen, Joel Osteen refusing to open his mega church to evacuees, which he has since.
Yeah.
Public pressure mounting.
Oh, right.
And I said this yesterday. I said, I wonder how much pressure he got from his congregation.
Yeah. Actually, that would be very interesting to know.
Because I wonder if it was just outside pressure.
Or if it was from within.
Or from within.
Yeah.
The second honorable mention is here in LA, the LA City Council. In a vote of 14-1, the LA City Council has voted to replace Columbus Day with Indigenous Peoples Day. And it will be a paid holiday for city workers. LA joined San Francisco and several other cities nationwide in honoring Native Americans instead of Columbus.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
I love that. I would hate to be the one dickwad who voted no on that.
Yeah, I think it was, I can't remember what councilman it was, but I read that he was worried that, oh, he represents an Italian American constituency.
Oh, okay.
And he was worried that the Italian Americans would be offended that
they're
not celebrating Columbus.
All right.
But he's not the winner.
No, I think that's so great. And it's one of those subtle things that, you know, you're taught in school, like, yeah, to celebrate Columbus. And I think that changing that narrative is so important.
Yeah. But who is the winner?
So
chicken dinner.
Winner chicken dinner is the state of Illinois.
Why?
We do not often give Hellion of the Week to an entire state. Usually that's reserved for Dickwad of the Week.
Right.
But two reasons. They have two reasons. So first, they became the second state to officially outlaw the gay panic defense.
Mm-hmm.
So as we talked about a few episodes ago, California was the only state to not allow a gay panic or trans panic defense against a murder charge. So Governor Bruce Rauner signed SB 1761, which bars attorney from submitting as a defense that their client was threatened by the victim's real or perceived sexual orientation.
That's so stupid.
Right?
Who would do that?
I don't. It's actually, it happens a lot.
Apparently. I know. It's crazy.
It's great. So, fun fact, according to Anthony Christ, who is a law professor and one of the architects of this bill, said that this was the first unanimously approved and enacted LGBT laws in the country.
That's amazing.
So the state legislator unanimously approved it, and then it was signed. Christ also states, quote, at the heart of gay and trans panic defenses is the idea that individuals who do not conform to gender norms are abnormal and should be feared. They reinforce outdated notions that LGBT persons are mentally ill and predatory. They endorse the proposition that violence against LGBT people is excusable. So this is a really good step forward. Right. It's sad that Illinois is only the second state to enact this, but
like I said, gay is in.
And then second thing, they became the 10th state to enact automatic voter registration. So when you go and get go to the DMV and get a license or other forms of government identification, they automatically sign you up to vote. So Governor Rauner, the same guy, signed this, and it was actually also passed unanimously through the state legislature. And this could potentially register up to 1 million more voters in Illinois. So currently, Illinois has 2.2 million unregistered but eligible citizens to vote. And so, you know, groups like Demos are predicting that this law will get about half of them.
It's crazy that we, in 2017, it's a news thing that states are are automatically voting, registering people to vote.
Right?
Like, ooh, news.
Cool.
Yeah, great. Illinois is on the track.
I know, right? Well, and they also, they join Oregon, Alaska, California, Colorado, Connecticut, District of Columbia, Georgia, Rhode Island, Vermont, and West Virginia. So Oregon was actually the first state to implement automatic voter registration, which was last year.
That's crazy.
I know. And roughly 225,000 new people were registered that way. And Oregon had the highest increase in voter turnout in the country from 2012 to 2016 for the presidential election. So the percentage of people of color who were registered to vote jumped from 53 to 79%, according to the Alliance for Youth Action. So
that's great.
I know.
And I think that, you know, hopefully the Democratic Party can turn around its messaging. I've always been super critical of the messaging that the party has done because it's poor.
Right.
Slogans. I mean, we went through a whole slogan thing. I don't know what the jobs thing was.
Right.
And then it died and we've never heard from it again. But I'm hoping that as these states, like Illinois, they start to register people, that people are taking a hard look at the actual policies that are benefiting them and to start to understand what party is the party that they should be registering for.
It's true. It's true. I mean, especially because it's so obvious that the GOP keeps legislating bills
to prevent
voter registration.
And they know why.
Right.
This
should shock no one, because the higher voter turnout is, the more likely a Democrat is to win.
Absolutely. So, Devin, we got some action items that you guys like to show, which I love this segment.
I know. We added it.
It's a call to action.
Yes, exactly. One of our listeners actually suggested it to us, because we used to throw like action items in with the information. Mm-hmm. And they were like, no, like put them at the end all together. And we were like, bling. So, we really only have one action item, but it's a big one.
Right.
So this is how you can donate money and other aid to communities of color in Houston. So there's such a need for aid right now, and it's important to consider all communities that need help.
Yeah, because, you know, all lives matter.
Right. Apparently. Right. Oh, that was good. So we'll link to this great roundup with a lot of different charities to donate to, but here are just a few.
The Black Women's Defense League. You can go to paypal.me/worldonmyshoulder. So that's paypal.me/worldonmyshoulder.
It's actually forward slash.
Forward slash. Don't backslash.
Yeah.
You might get a whole different. You might get a whole different website.
And there's the Living Hope Wheelchair Association for folks who need wheelchairs and other assistance products. So that's LHWAssociation.org/donate.
and The Way Home, specifically designed to help homeless folks during the flood. www.thewayhomehouston.org.
And then Races Texas, that they are specifically helping undocumented immigrants stranded by ICE during the disaster, which we talked about last episode. So that's racestexas.org, R-A-I-C-E-S. Texas.org.
Not like racist Texas.
No, like
we do know.
Which we do know.
Greg Abbott.
Don't go to that website.
Don't go to that website either. That will have a big picture of Greg Abbott and the entire Republican legislature in Texas there.
That's only funny because it's true.
It's true, right. It's sad because it's true, too. Last but not least, the Transgender Foundation of America specifically provides aids to trans and intersex people who are often turned away at shelters. You can go to www.tfahouston.com.
Yeah, so, you know, it's so important to help our fellow citizens, like you were saying earlier. People really do come out during disasters, and so it's good to keep in mind that there are some people with special needs, like wheelchairs or, you know, undocumented immigrants that really need more help.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, all right, that's our show. Packed show.
Packed show.
We always, every episode at the end, we say packed show. We're trying to think of something else to say, but it's just so true.
Big show.
Big show.
Huge.
It's awful. But I just want to say thank you to Drexel for being here with
us. I really appreciate you guys having me on. And hopefully next time I'm here, Sarah's here as well.
I know. That would be really fun.
That would be a fun show. We might not get any work done.
We wouldn't. We would just
You talk. Guys, it might just be a shit show of a talking and just a bunch of laughing.
I know. It probably would be. But yeah, so thank you guys so much. Thank you, friends, so much for listening. And we're not sure about our show on Tuesday, but we will definitely be back Thursday.
And you can catch my show, The Political Beat, on AfterBuzz TV, Tuesday nights at 6 p.m. And our first show is back this Tuesday.
Where can they find you?
You can find me at Drexel Hurd on Twitter. And if you find me on Facebook, you can find me on Facebook, Drexel Hurd.
Love it when it's easy.
It's easy. I try to make it super easy.
For more information on today's episode, please visit our website at www.hellbentpodcast.com. You'll find the articles we discussed as well as additional resources. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at HellbentPod, and you can follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/HellbentPodcast. We also have a fan group called Dickwads Be Gone, which you can find on Facebook.
Please listen on iTunes and rate us 5 stars, because that's just like the rules of feminism. We also have a Patreon, and you can find us at patreon.com/hellbentpodcast. You can support us for as little as $1 a month, and for $5 a month, you get access to exclusive content, mini podcasts, and behind-the-scenes looks at the making of Hellbent.